Hi, my name is Akshita Mathur and welcome to the third season of TIF Talkies, an audio initiative by the India Forum. In this season, we've been taking a deeper look into digital data and surveillance. And for this episode on digital data and finance, we're joined by Rohan Jaygirdar, who is an independent fintech consultant working with organizations specifically in the banking industry. Rohan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me here. I'm really glad to do this.
So to start with, broadly, how has the recent turn towards digital data impacted the financial world, both in terms of increasing as well as improving accessibility of services?
So if you look at financial accessibility or financial inclusion, largely India has been a positive story, I would say. So if you were to look at purely the metrics that are published by RBI. So RBI has come up with a financial inclusion index to sort of measure how financial inclusion is how we are faring on financial inclusion as a country. So it looks at a bunch of criteria, primarily across three broad parameters. One is access, second is usage of the financial products, and third is quality. And each of these parameters have different weightages, with usage having a higher weightage as compared to access and quality. So if you go by these numbers, we've done quite well over the last few years, especially over the last 4 years. So we've seen a 24% jump. We've gone to about 53.9% financial, 53.9 by RBI's metrics. So by that number, we've done well. However, that said, there are some caveats over here. So a lot of the financial success story or digital financial success story in India has been driven by financial payments, especially given with larger proliferation of UPI. So that's kind of been really the driver of the financial response story. But if you really look at it from a more holistic angle, if you really look at some of the metrics, for example, one that really jumps out is that if you look at the number of non-active accounts in India, it's probably the highest in the world, at 48%. So 48% of accounts are non-active, and this is about twice the average of 25% for other developing economies. And one of the reasons for this is because we've kind of India's really done well with some of these programs PMJDY. We've gone ahead and created these accounts. But if you really look at it from the usage perspective and from a broader financial literacy perspective, that sort of understanding is really not seeped in as yet. We need to kind of really look at the financial inclusion metrics from several points, several perspectives to be able to determine how we are really doing on that particular scale. But generally speaking, I think there is an increased awareness about digital financial products. What is really required, what is really the need of the hour at this point of time is to sort of capitalize on that awareness to really drive in a more holistic understanding of financial products and drive in more on the qualitative aspects of the financial products. Yeah.
Right. So you spoke about UPI. Are there currently regulations in place to monitor the use of data collected by fintech companies, both at the time of joining via KYC and during the use of these apps, for instance, by Paytm or PhonePe?
So if you're talking about some of the KYC data that is, that you would probably you'd be giving PhonePe or Paytm at the time of setup of wallet or any of these things, no, we don't have any regulations around that. So this is the place where the data protection bill is, the data protection law is going to come in and into play. So this has been in the offing for a while now. It was first called the Personal Data Protection Bill, then it went through some revisions. It was then referred to a joint parliamentary committee they came out with some changes. Now it's been again published, and now with the new this one that's been version that's been published, they've also included some of the anonymized data, that is a non-personalized data as well, apart from the personalized data, personal data, as part of the ambit of that particular bill. But I think now there are certain, this one, there are certain reports now out there that say that, you know, the government is probably looking to come up with an altogether fresh bill. There's been a lot of criticism about how this particular bill handles data protection of individuals, especially, and how some of the more contentious issues are related to surveillance and things like that. To really answer your question, no, we don't really have anything as yet. And this is actually a common gripe faced by many users, I would say.
So in more recent years, the concept of the account aggregator system has been introduced to allow collecting and sharing of individuals' financial data amongst institutions with ease. Would you be able to explain the system in a little bit more detail?
Absolutely. So here's the thing, right? So I'll explain this by giving a really short example. Example of an event that we are all well acquainted with. When it comes to actually applying for a loan, say you're applying for a housing loan, you are required to submit some sort of a documentation, because most of the time these are loans provided against some sort of a collateral, or even if it is a collateral free loan, it is on the basis of some sort of an income that you probably have. So to be able to do this, now there are two things that are required, right? One is that you need to provide these documents, and these are documents probably not necessarily emanating from this one source. For example, with the housing loan, you'd be probably required to provide your payslip, you'd be required to provide your statements, you'd be required to provide probably, and these statements doesn't necessarily have to come from just one account, you could be having multiple bank accounts, and you'd probably be required to even provide your credit score. Many times banks themselves have the ability to be able to fetch these credit scores by themselves, but still being provided by the user at the end of the day to the bank to be able to determine. Now, the thing is that one is that you're getting this data from several sources. Second is that it needs to be verified or vetted data, or that, you know, that it is actually the real data, that you're not creating something up on your own and, you know, you're supplying that to the bank. So what the account aggregator system really aims to do is solve this one problem of actually bringing in data from multiple sources, and second is signing it or verifying it or vetting it rather, and providing the banks or the financial institutions which will be using this some sort of a verified mechanism, so that they can be sure about the fact that the data that they are fetching is actually is real, and it's not prepared in some sort of a fraudulent mechanism. So that's basically what the account aggregator system is really about.
To regulate these entities, RBI introduced the Non-Banking Financial Company Account Aggregator Framework, or the NBFCAA, in 2016. Could you briefly explain what this framework encapsulates?
Sure. So just to be clear, NBFCAA framework is an NBFCAA is basically Non-Banking Financial Companies Account Aggregator. So this is a specific class of NBFCs that has been created by the RBI, but they are not necessarily regulated by RBI. In fact, these institutions are going to be self-regulated via a self-regulating body called Sahamati, which is actually one of the concerns associated with this whole class of institutions. But nevertheless, these are NBFCAs that have been conceptualized by the RBI's framework, and they've been put out. So the way this essentially works, make it really easy, is that, so say for example, when you want to give out your information or data about to avail a loan, the way you ordinarily do it is that you would go to your bank account, fetch your statement download it in whatever PDF format, and you know, give it. You usually have that vetted by the bank. You probably go to a bank and have them notarize it or stamp it or something of that sort, and then you deliver it to the bank at the end of the day. But in this case, what you essentially will be able to do is that the account. So the entity which requires that financial data, they are going to request this account aggregator. The account aggregator is going to in turn come and ask you as a user for your consent to fetch that data on your behalf, your statement data on your behalf. And once you as a user have consented it, the account aggregator actually goes, fetches those statements from your bank, and then it passes it on to the other bank, which is actually giving you the loan. So in some sense, it is one, it is aggregating, not really in the sense that it is. So by law, account aggregators are not able to really see what is under that data, what is inside the data, but they're putting it together, they're packaging it together by fetching it from different sources, and they are supplying it at the end of the day to the institution or the company which needs this particular data. So all of this is done through sort of a consent-based architecture where a user is providing that consent, and only when the user provides that consent, this data actually goes ahead and is actually shared across with the financial entity which wants to use this data.
So why has the turn towards the account aggregator system and the NBFC AA framework come under the scanner for raising privacy concerns?
So there are some issues that have really come out. So starting first with the one that I alluded to in my earlier comment was with the regulation. So AAs are proposed to be self-regulated under this industry body called Sahamati. But we all know that, you know, financial self-regulation sort of remains fraught with danger. There are issues that we've seen. But to be clear, it's not the only set of financial institutions that we are seeing that are being self-regulated. For example, mutual funds are also self-regulated by a self-regulating authority called AMFI. AMFI is the one which represents all the mutual funds, when it comes to any this one with any sort of dealings with SEBI. It is AMFI which sort of represents the body of mutual funds, AMCs. But the problem over here is that we are dealing with something that is absolutely new and that is absolutely unprecedented, in the sense that data brokers as such is a very new concept. And having a completely self-regulated industry body kind of running this is a slight bit of a concern over here. Second is with the data security itself. The thing is that one of the problems with the way the way AA is kind of designed is that when an account aggregator can share financial information with the consumers with several entities, but there is no requirement that the sharing of this financial information has to be linked to the provision of a specific financial service. So it is not necessary that, it is only for this particular service that I can give this financial information. So in the sense that I'm saying, so there could be cases where, there could be like a house owner who may say that I want to look at your financial data, to determine whether, you want to kind of live in this house. It's not going to be probably an individual, but say, for example, a company like Nested or somebody of that sort could actually say that, we want to look at your financial data to be able to do that. Now, is that the right thing to do or a wrong thing to do? That's a separate matter. But essentially what I'm saying is that the sharing of that data is not necessarily linked to any particular financial service. It could be, it's a broad sharing of data. As long as the user is consenting it, it can be shared across with the user. And I think the other problem is really with the consent, right? So what do we really mean by informed consent is, it's a tough question really. We're all trying to figure out. So we've seen in countries like, we've seen in the EU, for example, where GDPR has been implemented, there are very real, problems that are associated with just infamous consent fatigue. You know, this is essentially where you go onto a website, you see a bunch of pop-ups pop up over there. You're not really sitting and going through each one of them. Instead, you're just saying accept and just going ahead with it, right? So it's a consent on paper, but is it really an informed consent? I don't know, right? So that becomes a problem. So this is kind of where I wanted to do this one. And the last problem, I think, which is sort of a long-term problem over here, is that what we are actually doing is that by creating a mechanism to make it very easy to fetch data, what this could end up doing over long-term is that it actually decreases the costs or decreases the value of data at a societal level. So think of it something like the way, an example is that, you can think of the way what we've done with, some of the state-subsidized irrigation schemes. We have so many state-subsidized irrigation schemes. So farmers have never really realized what is the actual cost of water. So we kept drawing a lot of water, and now we've suddenly reached the point in many places like Punjab, etc., where we have a lot of we've reached a point where the water tables are really down and suddenly the cost of water is being realized. So we don't want to end up in that sort of a situation where we've made it really easy to draw this data, but it is because we as people don't really understand the true value of data at this stage. Over a longer term, we may end up, actually running into a situation where we've actually discounted the real cost, the real price of this data. And we've ended up with a system where, it's completely been subsidized or it's completely been discounted because of the ease of being able to draw out the data. So these are some of the concerns, you can say, with the NBFCA program.
Right. So this brings me to my last question, Rohan. Overall, how are issues of privacy and consent impacted by the rise of financial technology in India? And have these been addressed in discussions surrounding the right to privacy judgment or the data protection bill?
So if you look at the whole privacy argument, one of the things that really something has been pointed out by others is that the data protection bill is really more about data protection. It doesn't really talk about, it's not really a privacy protection bill in the sense that there is greater onus on data. This one focused on the data protection itself, and actually the current, although I would say that the data protection bill is definitely a step in the right direction, in the sense that we are one of the few countries to actually come up with a comprehensive plan to be able to regulate the usage of individual data. We still have a long way to go in terms of protecting the privacy and the rights of users using this particular data. So there are definitely, while the conversation has been there's been a lot of talk about this, and there is now increased awareness. When it comes to financial data, we are still a long while away, and this is it's largely a function of both. One, the general financial literacy in the country, and second, the bill itself or the state itself does not really seem to view the financial data privacy as an important cornerstone. So, for example, if you see one of the points in the new data protection bill, for example, it talks about the data breach. In the event of a data breach, all the company or the data fiduciary which has the data, at whose end this breach has occurred, all they're really required to do is just inform the data protection authority or the regulating entity that this data breach has occurred in 72 hours, and then the data protection authority itself is then going to decide if they want to inform the data subjects, that is the individuals whose data has been compromised, if they should be informed at all. So I'm talking about this because there was a recent example of a particular payments company, an Indian payment company, whose data was compromised, and the founders kept denying this again and again on Twitter, but just, in face of so much proof that was really put out there, so many companies kept talking, so many individuals kept talking about how false loans had been created against them, and so much as one, so many, fraud activities had been carried out. But for whatever reason, the data breach itself was not really given as much importance as it should have been. And I think some of the other problems that are associated with this is that the current setup, at least the data protection bill that we're talking about currently in the current format, it's really bureaucratic in the sense that it takes a very bureaucratic solution in that it requires the data fiduciaries, who are the organizations taking this data, to create a sort of a data protection policy. But it falls short because, it doesn't really require them to implement it. And the data protection authority that is going to be set up by the government is not going to be able to sit and enforce whatever policy that they're coming up with. It's really hard for them to be able to sit down and see how every company that is actually taking the data, if today, Swiggy is going to take my data, or Zomato is going to be taking financial data, any of these organizations are going to start taking any of the financial data, how are they actually implementing the privacy policies that they say that they are implementing? Who's going to really determine that, right? And it cannot be a government body which is going to be just doing this, because it's just going to be, it's really going to be impossible. Because if you're talking about millions of organizations or hundreds of thousands of organizations, who's going to be sitting and doing this? So some of these kinds of things are the real problems, I think, that we're really going to face in terms of actually enforcing these rules. So while the conversation is definitely happening in the right direction, I think more needs to be definitely done. And that can only happen when users become aware of their data subjects, that is, users as citizens become more aware of their own data rights, and they start asking the questions.
This brings me to the end of the conversation, Rohan. Thank you so much for taking up the time to answer these questions for us today.
Thanks for having me, Akshita. I'm really happy to do this, and I'm really glad that there is interest in this particular subject. More needs to be done as we as citizens, as consumers. We need to definitely become more aware of what the data fiduciaries or the state actors, what are they doing and how they are going to be using our data. So, yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you to our listeners and subscribers for tuning in as well. We will be back with another episode, so do follow us on our social media channels to stay updated. Thank you.